This is the June 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Dave Chatterton is here from Champaign and Strategic Farm Marketing. And we're joined by Ben Coons at McDonald Pells. He's out of Sullivan, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at WILLAG.org. Recording on a Thursday afternoon after what can be considered a catastrophe of a day, the largest one-day move in soybeans over the history of the contract, we believe at this point, that in part not because soybeans, Wayne Nelson, had a big move yesterday, but part of the other complex. Can you explain to me just a little bit about how it is that soybeans managed to move more than the limit, despite the fact that it wasn't a limit move on the previous day?
Well, I guess that the Merck decided that if bean oil moved the limit the day before, that they'd expand beans to limit moves, or like the expanded limits the next day. Actually, it wasn't that well publicized. It was one little line that didn't say we increased it. And a lot of the people didn't realize it until after it popped through more than a dollar lower that it even was going on. And then they went back and hunted for it. And I found it on a little email that came through at 6:45 this morning.
So the soy complex is connected together completely now.
Yeah, Todd. So, to follow up on what Wayne said, the CME's made a number of changes here strategically this year. They started with the position limits where those were expanded, and not by a little bit, by a tone of 60% to 80% in most cases. Then they've expanded the daily price limits, and now they've tied these together. So as Wayne indicated, right now when we have anything in the soy complex, whether it's the beans, the meal, or the oil that makes a limit move, the following day, the entire complex is on these expanded limits. And he says, as Wayne indicated, wasn't a well, advertised fact. I think a lot of people were caught a little bit off guard from it. But we are testing out these new limits and these new price limits and the volatility ranges. So it's, I guess it was a good test. I don't know. I mean, we're going to see more of this, I think, as we go along. But it's certainly something that we have to be prepared for from a marketing and a producer, risk management standpoint going forward.
Dave Chatterton, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing, and Ben Coons is here. He's with McDonald Pells, a farmer, and with McDonald Pells there out of Sullivan, Illinois. First, tell me a little bit about the farm and how things look for you.
We look really good where we're at. We've been fortunate to catch some of these spotty rains, and I've been out spraying the last week, went around all the corn and sprayed through all the beans, and we're off to a good start. We've had in recent memory, corn looks great. I think today was the first day we were starting to see any rolling of it. Beans really starting to take off with the heat and moisture. So we're one of the few folks that can say we're sitting in a good spot today. But I tell you, just in the drive over here, 60 miles, I saw a lot of good corn and then a lot of bad corn. So it's a mixed bag out there.
So farmers over the last month have really begun to worry, maybe for longer than that, Wayne, that this year feels very much like, and they usually hearken back to 2012, and I don't think it's because it's the recent drought. It's because it feels much more like 12 to them than any other year. It probably put them on a pretty tough footing today, I would think.
Yeah, it sure does, Todd, and I think there's a lot of analog things that go along with it. The amount of drought, we've said all along we've been in a climatological drought, but not an agricultural drought, because we've got timely rains in a lot of places. And you look at the percentage of drought, the percentage of moisture in the ground and everything like that, and it goes right back to 2012. I think one of the guys on from T-Storm was talking about that, in fact, on the radio this afternoon, and how much analog it really was. And it is. We have had just-in-time rains, especially around in my area over in Indiana and a lot of places. And basically, you have to get up to about Route 80 or so going north. And north of there, they haven't had those good rains like that. But we've got what looks like an excellent start there. And we've had 2/10, 4/10 an inch. And it's been really, we got really good crops now. But let me tell you, they can dry out really fast because there's not any subsoil moisture.
Across the Corn Belt, can you explain to me what the crop looks like and which farmers are most worried? And I know that the Dakotas and to the west, parts of maybe Iowa are worried, but there is a tongue of drought that seems to run right across the Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana borderlines.
Yeah, Todd, of course, if you look at the drought monitors and what's been going on, that area has been expanding. Our customers in southern Minnesota, southwest Minnesota are particularly concerned with where they're at right now, but we've got folks in southern Illinois, we've got folks in Missouri, we have a number of people in Iowa, we have a few pockets in Ohio and Indiana. So, you know, I think the concern here, the math as it works out, the USDA right now is using a record 179.5 yield in their balance sheet for corn. They're using a 50.8 for beans, which will be the second highest yield ever nationally. In doing so, we need a lot of things to go right in a big portion of the belt. And I don't think we have a crop disaster on our hands. You know, in eastern Illinois here, we look pretty good compared to the areas that I've been in. And I think everybody on their farms has a little bit of stuff that looks good, but there's enough concern out here for what's happening. And I think just the weather pattern in general that, you know, it's going to take a lot to get there. You know, we've had a pattern change here, but it's caused by a tropical event. So we've got this storm that's coming up through the Gulf and affecting the ridging trough pattern that we've had. That's going to move it out for 5 to 7 days. But it looks to us like after that passes, that ridging trough pattern falls right back into its place. And we're working toward the same situation of some dryness in the western and northwestern parts of the belt in particular.
And how should producers who saw soybeans drop a dollar and corn drop 40 cents on Thursday deal with that in their mind?
Well, in their mind, I think they have to be prepared for a lot of volatility. They have to realize that we're still at some pretty profitable levels here, you know, in terms of revenue per acre. And even though we've taken this fall and we've seen this kind of volatility, it can work both ways. The growing season is far from over. I think this is why you market with a plan and along the way and as you get to certain price levels. And, you know, keep in mind that I think this is a year that, even though we've had high prices and profitable levels, it's a year that proves that you are much better off if you understand how to use the paper market to your advantage. So if you've made a sale and set a floor, that's great, but you can use calls and call spreads to have a riskless way of participating in an upside and do that for a known cost. If you're afraid to make sales because you're worried about your crop production, you can turn that around and protect something on the downside and maybe set a cap on top that puts you still in a profitable position and gives you that flexibility that you need in a market that's going to be this volatile.
What are the technical and fundamental reasons behind the move lower that we've seen and the big move on Thursday, do you suppose, Wayne?
Well, I think number one is the weather. We are talking about rain in all the dry places. We're talking about much more coming in, a change of weather patterns, number one. We've got politics, number one, even the mention that we might give RIN a relief to some of the small things and the politics that we watched change when we got our new president. Right away, I'm going to sign a presidential order saying we're going to take away all of those. And, you know, looking, that's part of our corn demand. So that's a little bit of weakening of that. The Fed comments, you stop and you think what the Fed did. They were talking about moving up a full year when they were going to maybe raise some rates and with tightening the stuff that way. Our soy crush has been down. We are not, they aren't crushing as much along the way. And of course, it's not making as much money. The dollars went higher. We're seeing declining export sales. We haven't seen China do anything in the world market here for, you know, a couple of months. And that's a little disturbing. It's what exactly we had to do to ration our crop, but that's still there. And then if you want to talk about technical, boy, was it a deep dive below key support levels on what has been going on all week. And then especially on Thursday. So, you know, we've got a train wreck as far as the technical picture goes.
I want to stick with the fundamentals for just a minute, Ben. You specialize in the export market. China has been in under the phase one trade agreement based on calendar years. So we're in calendar year two at this point. Is it likely from your perspective that they can import as much as the expectation would be, or are they simply falling behind? Because they've been doing, in the ag sector at least, a really good job for some time.
I think the ag sector contribution will probably be similar overall, but when it's all said and done, than what it has been here in the past. If you look at the pace of purchases of the corn and the beans, Right now, beans are probably a little slower than what we thought they would be, but a lot of that has to do with what's going on in Brazil. The fact that Brazil is not going to have much of a corn market, so they're going to be a little bit more aggressive selling beans in August, September. We've got a whole bunch of corn still going to ship to China by September, so our ports are going to be full shipping corn and busy shipping corn. You start looking at corn, they've been awfully aggressive in getting ownership on. I mean, we're sitting here in the middle of June, and they've got 12 million tons on the book of U.S. corn and another 7 million tons of Ukraine bought, so they're going to be pushing 20 million tons new crop purchases in June. So the real question is, and I don't think anybody can tell you the answer that's not high level in China, is are they going to have a 25 million ton program in the coming years? Is it going to be a 35 million ton program? And that'll be a big contributing factor to what they're going to do there.
How much does the cost of freight make a difference in this? And is it sharply higher?
Yeah, so freight's the key thing here. So if you look at kind of global origin values, U.S. is the highest. Obviously, we don't need to sell any, and it's to the end of our year. Brazil is much more expensive than Argentina, and Argentina is really cheap because they don't have any water in the river. So, you know, if a boat can usually load 45,000 tons, now it's only going to load 38,000 tons, the guy says that owns the boat says, well, you have to pay me more. I'm not coming to get your corn. And that's made reverberations around the globe, and so we're seeing freight sharply higher. I would say on some of these lanes, you've seen an over 50% increase from a year ago.
And how does that impact global flow of the commodities in general? Does it slow down? Does it change where commodities are being sourced from?
Yeah, so freight's really going to be the driver of how the flows are established. So in the example we have right now, Argentina corn is the cheapest corn in the world at face value, right? But the fact that the freight is so expensive because they have a draft issue means that if a guy in Egypt is going to buy a cargo of corn, his landed cost is going to be much higher out of Argentina. And so that's what drives these origin differences is what is the landed price competitiveness, because that's what tells the buyer to do.
I have another question about the logistics themselves. So if we need, from the United States perspective, to ship a bunch of corn between now and the fall, which you told me was going to be the case to China, what happens when we get to the fall? And normally we would start using the river system for soybean shipments. And how does that change or complicate matters?
Well, you know, yeah, you're going to run into capacity constraints at the ports at some point. I don't think we're there yet. But, you know, what it does is you have a free market, a very efficient market in the freight market. So a barge carrier, as barges become more demand, barge price is going to go up. And so you're going to see that reflected in the bid at the local river house. That extrapolates itself to the port. So where normally someone might make, let's say, 10 or 15 cents per bushel by taking the corn off of a boat and putting it into a vessel, now all of a sudden you have two products competing. And so the owner of that asset's going to say, well, I should take more margin. You know, my margins are going to go up. And so that price difference between a barge in New Orleans and a vessel in New Orleans is going to go wider as they're competing for a finite capacity. And in the same token, as people say, well, U.S. is the best origin to come from because it's the cheapest one, we're going to buy freight. As that freight continues to be bought, that lane will rise relative to others, and it'll kind of normalize the market over time. But it is a very free and efficient market when it's left alone.
And how does the United States today and maybe in September, October, November, December fare as the landed cost around the world compared to other nations?
Well, right now we're probably pretty well the highest in the world. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, Brazil's cheaper on corn. They're probably going to be pretty similar on their freight costs overall. I mean, comparable. U.S. is the most expensive in the world on a FOB basis, let alone a freight basis. So to destination. So as we look at what they call cost and freight, so that would be the price to the buyer's destination. The U.S. is the most expensive through the end of the crop year, but that's going to flip when it turns, and we're going to see lower premiums at the U.S. Gulf when harvest starts, as we typically do. We're going to see the Brazil crop winding down and Argentine crop winding down, and that's going to put the onus on the U.S. to be the shipper for the world.
One more question before I move on from you, which is, from Brazil, when normally would their export market year sort of wind down for corn?
Well, you know, last couple of years, they've been kind of a pain in our side here up until November or December, because they've had these big corn crops and long tails, and then they'll kind of get in trouble because last few years they've oversold their position, and now they're saying, oh no, we're going to have to import corn from Argentina to do it. But with the safrinha crop, I would say this year we're probably going to be seeing them out of the market by, for sure, September, maybe even by mid-August, to where their only thing they're going to have left to export is beans.
All right, so that takes care of the export market. I'm trying to lay some fundamentals going forward, and then we'll come back and deal with where the price of corn and soybeans has gone. You talked a little bit about the ethanol issues as it's related to SREs, the small refinery exemptions, Wayne. And I'm wondering how the Biden administration might end up dealing with this, Dave, going forward, because they're getting pressure politically from both sides of the aisle. The president made promises to the farm community that he would support biofuels going forward. Of course, not very happy the farm and biofuels community about the SREs at the moment and the push for electrification for vehicles in his budget. However, when he came into office, he did reverse a bunch of the SREs that were already in place. What is it that we believe the Biden administration will do, and how is ethanol faring at this point as we have brought the economy back online?
Yeah, I mean, ethanol has been faring well, Todd. I mean, demand has picked up. We've seen gasoline demand in the U.S. finally kind of get back above those 2020 pre-pandemic levels, back to the 2019 levels here in the last 3 to 4 weeks. And so the demand for ethanol and the blending capability for that physical product is there, and is going to stay there as we continue to recover. The issue that we're talking about is really all about the biofuel certificates and the RINs. And RINs got very pricey here of late. We had D4 RINs for ethanol above $2 a gallon. We had D6 biofuel RINs probably pushing that $2 level. Now, the talk that we've had of late has pushed those values back 30 to 40 cents, almost 50 cents in the case of the D6 RINs. So we're seeing some relief on that front. But the political coalition of big oil is certainly in the ear of the Biden administration. That in itself isn't a big worry for me. I think what's the bigger worry on our end, or what we see, is that gasoline prices are a very hot political topic, and they're an election topic. If you look at the Biden administration, they've been very supportive of the ethanol front to this point. But now when gasoline prices are getting expensive, that's a very big election issue against the GOP come 2024, when the re-elections happen. If we've got expensive gasoline, it's going to be, 4 years ago we had cheap, today we've got it expensive. And I think Biden's administration has a lot of competing ideologies within their own administration about which direction to go with biofuel policy. But I think that gasoline price is the one that you really need to watch. They don't want to have that as an election bugaboo going forward in 2024.
And bottom line, ethanol going forward, unless something happens with the SRE, demand looks good, and we should be chewing through a large corn grind.
Yeah, correct. I mean, demand is recovering. We look like we're more or less on pace to hit the USDA's number for old crop. The new crop number shows some increase going forward. That's what we're looking for. You know, demand, I'm one of the guys that was worried, in the beginning that we would never see gasoline demand recover beyond the pre-pandemic levels because of changes in work habits and demographics and things that were going on. And we've proven that we can do that. It may be a little bit of a surge here in the summer, but we're seeing strong demand not only in the U.S., but also globally, China, Europe, Asia, and other parts of the world. So we're seeing a nice recovery on that front. And so margins have been under a little pressure here from a producer standpoint. RINs have been a big part of their profitability, and they're sensitive to that. So this battle is far from over. I think it'll have some ebbs and flows and fits and starts as we go forward. But, we have to be sensitive to it. It's 35 to 40% of our underlying balance sheet demand for corn comes from ethanol, and it's definitely going to be a topic we're going to have to keep an eye on going forward.
We've done exports. We've done ethanol. That leaves livestock sector. We've had ransomwares in that. Has created some issues, maybe longer term, but fundamentally, do we think that the livestock sector is going to continue using as much grain as it has?
I think it will, Todd. I think that the numbers are out there. The livestock is, the meat is in demand. We've seen, and it's clearing off as we go forward here. We've seen steak prices, all of beef prices in the grocery store go up as we went there, and they've still had very good demand. There was meat specials last week. I went in I had to get a green check because it was all sold out. People were there buying, and I think we're going to see a lot of continued consumption. People are really tired of not eating out. They want to eat out. They want to go out and do things. And I think we're going to see that bulge for a while here, especially though we've still got some the money that the government sent out to everybody. They had that. Now, 6 months down the road, when some of that rebate money seems to be gone and the prices are a lot higher in restaurants, we might see it shake back. But for the next 6 months, I see a very good demand for meat.
So we put kind of the fundamentals down. The last piece that I want to talk about before we get into some pricing strategies and what farmers ought to think about longer term in the face of this drop in the marketplace is the competition from overseas. We talked, roughly speaking, about the Brazilian corn crop, but the northern hemisphere produces far and away much more grain than the southern hemisphere, both corn and wheat. And in the coarse grains, rice as well. What do you think the northern hemisphere is looking like in terms of the competition from Ukraine, Russia, the Chinese, the size of the Chinese corn crop at this point?
Well, Todd, that's a good question. You know, I hear Europe's looking pretty decent overall. I think they're getting some comfort in the size of their wheat crop. You go over to Ukraine, it sounds like they're off to a decent start here. I think they're expecting a good crop. I haven't seen any projections. I mean, you know, we'll see here what really happens and how close to reality the USDA comes as this thing evolves. China, I mean, they haven't had a typhoon and I haven't heard of droughts and floods, so they're surely going to be better than last year, but I don't know that anybody outside of China really has a real handle on Chinese corn production. And the U.S. obviously has got a lot of focus now, and it's off to an okay start, but it's got plenty of hurdles. So I think overall it feels like we're probably going to have available supply throughout the northern hemisphere this year on a localized basis, whereas, you know, I don't think we're looking at Ukraine having a short crop by any means, so maybe we get a little bit more competition out of those guys. But at the same time, with everything going on, you know, the driver of it's going to be this freight market, as we've talked about with vessel freight being so high. And so, you know, a lot of that Ukrainian corn is going to want to go to Europe and help backfill that. And then you're going to have cheap feed wheat coming out of the EU. That places like Korea who like to feed wheat, you know, they're going to buy wheat today at $30 a ton discount to corn. And for those guys, that's a home run. So you're going to get, and you get in these environments, you have volatility. So your buyers are going to go hand to mouth. So I have a feeling that as we look at new crop sales for the U.S. and people start getting concerned, it's not that it's not going to be there. It's just not going to be there yet because, you know, if a farmer's scared by the volatility, imagine if, you know, you're the guy in somewhere in Asia running a feed mill that doesn't know if he's going to be right by 50 cents tomorrow or not. And there's some places that'll cost you your job.
Now let's turn our attention to the next, couple of weeks, to the end of the month, June 30th, USDA will release both the acreage and the grain stocks numbers. Most of those folks who are in the trade day in and day out, and I would imagine many farmers, were hoping that there would be another rally at some point where they could make a final pricing pitch to get themselves 30, 40, maybe 50% sold. On Thursday, of course, that appeared to have gone away. I'm wondering whether that's actually the case in your mind. So between now and the 30th of June, will there be another opportunity, or did we fall too far too fast?
Yeah, Todd, it's a great question. I think it's a very pertinent question here. And, you know, so yeah, we've had the opportunity to sell $6 cash new crop corn, to sell $14 new crop beans. Hopefully you've taken a bite of that apple. Going forward, I think the time parameter between here and the end of the month is going to be pretty tough to get the buyers to come back in, absent a very big change in the weather forecast. When we get into July, I think our key pollination window on corn looks like it's about July 10th through July 14th in this part of the country. So that weather in the first half, second half of July, and then early August for soybeans is going to be key. I think if you've missed the rally to this point and you're waiting to try and get back towards those levels, you're gonna have to wait beyond the June 30th report. The indication here is that we are going to pick up some additional acreage, probably, let's say, 2 million in corn, maybe 1 million in beans. There are certainly estimates out there that are higher than that. Our view of the market or the balance sheet would be that any extra production that comes in here is going to be eaten through pretty quickly with demand. But patience may be a virtue here. And again, this may be an opportunity where you can use some paper products or some pricing products to give yourself some downside protection while you wait out that potential rally in the summer. What I would say is that, you know, we're sitting here, you know, in the middle of June. This crop is far from made, and the weather story for 2021 has been volatile to this point, and I think it will continue to be volatile. And certainly I would expect that we've got, you know, another rally or two in the book, but probably not by June 30th.
A lot of strange weather going around now, Todd. Earthquake today centered Montezuma that shook the buildings in Crawfordsville. So we're looking at strange things. There's a lot of talk about possibility of strong winds, possibly another derecho, some hail coming in with some of the storms coming out of the Gulf and stuff like that. Don't like to think about that, but that's why we have crop insurance. But as far as looking at everything, I think Dave hit all the big points about the acreage and the stocks coming in here. Those are going to be the big things on the 30th. How many more acres of corn and what do we plant? You know we planted a lot more acres in the Dakotas. We know after talking to some of the people up there, some of it was planted, it come up, it died. Doesn't matter if it rains on it, now it's dead.
Yeah, I would just echo what the previous two guys have said. I can't see a situation where we're going to come screaming back and take this back out of the market but without some bullish help from that the stocks report and the acreage report. I think that's going to be a key one here that's probably going to set the tone until, like Dave said, we get through pollination and kind of see if some of these forecasts materialize. I know they've been disappointed in a lot of places. And so, you know, it's been wet in 11, 15-day range for Dakotas for a while. And I think that's more than 15 days ago. And they haven't seen quite what they had hoped for. So I think my view of it is for the farmers to say, you know, there is production risk here. And if you look at the balance sheets, we can't afford a big hiccup in the U.S. And so, you know, if you take this down to 172 on 93.5 million acres, you're probably going to have a lower than normal percentage of harvested with all the acres in Dakotas and western Kansas. They're going to have some issues. So I think it's going to be a wild ride. And I think guys just need to know their numbers well and base their marketing goals around that revenue per acre and not be so worried about clipping the high.
One last question for you before I get to a final word from each of you. Out of Brazil, are CONAB and the USDA still too high on the total size of the corn crop?
Everything I pick up from the commercials I talk to and people that know a lot more about Brazil than I do is that it's a whole lot closer to 90 than it is 100. And there's a lot of pretty sharp people out there saying it's got good potential to be below 90. And I think if that gets recognized, that's just another level of say we can't have these hiccups. And there's 10 million tons. It's probably going to have to come from someplace else. And so as we've talked before and how these fundamentals work and how grain gets moved around. If Brazil can't ship 10 million tons, it's going to have to come from somewhere else.
Just as a reminder, CONAB is the Brazilian crop at 96.4, I think, million metric tons. USDA is a couple million metric tons above that. So there's room to go down, apparently, in your opinion there. Let's get a final word from each of you. I'll start with you, Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I guess, you know, we've talked a lot about what's happened in the last couple of days and the big downturn that we've had here over the last, you know, you go back just in this week, we've lost 77 cents in corn in the new crop contract, about $1.80 in new crop beans. So certainly we've gotten a taste of the volatility or both bites of the apple. We saw it on the way up. We've seen it on the way down. Longer term, I want to take you back and remind you that I think a fundamental change took place in the market starting last spring and summer when the USDA started revising their stocks lower and the demand picked up. China has chewed through their feed grain reserves. They've started selling rice and wheat and whatever they can do to kind of supplement their market. Their pig herd is now back within a couple percentage points of where it was pre-ASF. So we're in a situation where demand is still, I think, the story in the marketplace, Todd, and it's still a situation where you can play some offensive here. So looking forward, I wouldn't be too disparate about what you've seen this week. I think the risk here is skewed, price risk is skewed to the upside as opposed to the downside, considering the move that we've had over the last 5 to 6 days. And in doing so, going forward, doesn't mean, you know, don't market. It doesn't mean don't manage your risk. It doesn't mean don't be cognizant of price. But, you know, I think there are some sunnier days ahead, and I think we have a situation where even with good yields this year, we don't necessarily yield our way into a supply that creates an excessive ending stocks or burdensome stocks situation. So keep that in mind. We've talked about, and our customers have marketed some 22 already. I think it's good to be looking at that when we see these multi-year highs. And again, just remember that, you know, I think it's a different situation than what we've seen the last several years.
Your final word, Wayne Nelson.
Well, Dave said most everything there very well, and he phrased it well that I think you should understand. I think we have to realize there's going to be some margin call selling the next, you know, tomorrow, especially Friday going into the weekend. But there is also the risk of what the weather can do over the weekend. So I think that we're going to open lower tomorrow morning, and I think that we will probably see some call buying just in case the weather doesn't come through.
And Ben Coons from McDonald Pels.
Yeah, these guys didn't leave much to be said. I just keep beating the same drum for producers out there. Just know your costs, know your revenue, and you know, pick your spots and get them. And from a personal note, I think every offer I've had has been booked in an overnight session, and I get an email in the morning. So don't be afraid to put numbers out there with your local grain buyers, because you know you're going to get clipped in the night session where you're not going to catch it. And that's the way it's been. That's where a lot of the volatility's been when we're making these big moves. So I think that'd be my word of advice, was just watch the bottom line and have offers in.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Wayne Nelson, Dave Chatterton, and Ben Coons. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.